Well, we are taking a break. We are taking a break from our series looking at the seven churches in Revelation so that we can dive more deeply into one of the classic hymns of our faith. And next week, we're actually going to have a special guest preacher from our presbytery, the local group of Presbyterian churches. But this week, we are looking at The Church's One Foundation by Reverend Samuel John Stone. The hymn quickly became very famous, so much so that one English archbishop once said, "Whenever I am called upon to open or dedicate a new church, I can always count on two things. Cold chicken will be served, and the Church's One Foundation will be sung." There are two slightly different stories of how this hymn came to be written. In both versions, Reverend Stone wanted to more deeply explain the Apostles' Creed through song, and so he created 12 different hymns to explain the 12 different parts of the Apostles' Creed. 11 of them didn't do a whole lot outside of his church, but one of them, The Church's One Foundation, became a hit. But the stories differ on why he wanted to do this. The happy Hallmark Channel version of the story is that he knew his congregants prayed the Apostles' Creed in their private prayers every day, just as you do, and he was worried that they didn't fully understand or appreciate all of the depth of meaning in the Apostles' Creed, so he created these songs to help his congregation pray with greater depth and understanding. Isn't that a nice story? The much more human and probably more real story says that there was an Anglican bishop in South Africa that was calling for new ways of being the church, and Reverend Stone vehemently disagreed with these different ideas because he thought he needed to counter it with a full-on defense of the classic creed, the Apostles' Creed. This other bishop in South Africa was saying that the church needed to really accommodate culture more and change what they were doing, while Reverend Stone thought that the church should hold fast to its one foundation, the confession of Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. Good thing we don't have to deal with those questions today, right? Matthew chapter 16, starting with verse 13. Please stand if you are able for the reading from the gospel. "Now when Jesus came into the district of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, 'Who do people say that the Son of Man is?' And they said, 'Some say John the Baptist, others Elijah, still others Jeremiah or one of the prophets.' He said to them, 'But who do you say that I am?' Simon Peter answered, 'You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God.' And Jesus answered him, 'Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father in heaven. And I tell you, you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not prevail against it. I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven.' But then he sternly ordered the disciples not to tell anyone that he was the Messiah." This is the word of the Lord, so thanks be to God. You may be seated. Well, the Presbyterian Church, the national denomination, has a very exciting goal to start 1,001 new worshiping communities over the next 10 years. We're a few years into it. I don't remember the exact end date, but that's the goal. They have the funds. They have the training. They have people that are focusing on different ethnicities to try to share the gospel. They have resources and partnerships. But whenever you have big money to go along with a big goal, you do sometimes get some squirrely stuff going on. A few years ago, I was having a conversation with one of the leaders of one of these hopeful new worshiping communities, and he shared his plan was to start off with these community events, like a Thursday night bowling and picnics in the park and getting people to go to concerts together. And I said, "You know, that's fantastic. That's kind of like what St. Patrick did in Ireland, where he helped people belong before they believe. So what's next after you get people coming?" A few confused silence seconds later, I wondered, did I like slip into Klingon or something? So I re-asked, you know, what comes next? What's the end goal after the bowling? And the leader responded incredulously, there is no other goal. That's it. That's my worshiping community. And I quickly yet politely ended the conversation and realized we clearly had different definitions of the church. I would say that a bowling, that's a great start. That's a great way to get people in. That's fantastic if that works in that community. Community events are a different way to help people connect with their faith. But gathering a bunch of people to have fun on its own is not the whole sum of what a church is to me. Now, to be fair, this group didn't actually even meet the definition put out by the National Church. They say that they are trying to, that their main goal is to seek to make and form new disciples of Jesus Christ to change and transform the world. I'm in for that. That sounds pretty good. I don't know how a bowling night, though, is going to help that happen on its own, if that's all you've got. As the hymn says, the church's one foundation is Jesus Christ, her Lord. Without that, we have nothing. Without that, we are nothing. If you read through the four Gospels, you know, there's the first four important books in the New Testament, you're only going to see the word church three times. And one of them is in our text today. So why don't we look at what Jesus says about what the church is. First off, we back up and say, what did Peter say? Peter said, you are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. And Jesus responds, I tell you, you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not prevail against it. What a statement. But you may be asking yourself, what rock is Jesus talking about? I see no rock in this text. What rock? Well, in the Greek, there's actually a little bit of a wordplay going on here. If you were to capture it in English, you might say that Jesus was saying, I tell you, you are a little rocky, and on this solid rock that you said, I will build my church. Jesus is saying that Peter's statement of faith, when he said, you are the Messiah, the Son of the living God, that is the foundation of the church. That's the solid rock. And Peter, little rocky, is an example of someone who is a part of the church because he can make that statement of faith. So according to Jesus, the church is comprised of anyone who can say that Jesus is the Messiah and the Son of the living God. That's our foundation. Here's another way to think about this. I was born in Austin, Texas. Given that one piece of information, you know that at least at one time I was a citizen of the United States of America, right? Don't worry, I still am. So I'm a citizen because I was born here. End of story. For me, it's a simple story about my citizenship. Now, suppose I break the law. And let's say I vandalize the church and then y'all turn me in. Could I be deported? Could I be kicked out? No, because I'm a citizen. If I weren't a citizen, it'd be a very different story. Now, the Greek word that we translate church really means the gathering of the free citizens. Or in this context, the citizens of God's kingdom. And just as there is a simple way to know that I'm a citizen, because I was born here, there's a simple way to know that I'm a citizen of God's kingdom. I can say that solid rock statement of faith that Jesus is the Messiah and the Son of God. If I can say that, I can't be deported from God's kingdom. I'm a citizen. Because the church's one foundation is Jesus Christ, her Lord. Now, this matters in two different directions. First off, we now know our minimum set of requirements for the church. Bowling is nice, but it's not going to help someone decide that Jesus is the Messiah and the Son of God. You're going to need something else. So that's not solid rock there. We need a little bit more. But we also know our maximum requirements. You're not going to lose your Jesus card if you forget to pray today. You're not going to lose your church membership if you don't come to church every week. You're not going to lose your salvation if you lied yesterday or even this morning, unless you lied to your pastor. Then you might be in trouble. Make sense so far? So I am a certified citizen in the U.S. You can't add any extra hoops for me to jump through. I'm already in. But I was at a Colorado Rockies game recently, and we were standing in line to get one of the famous hamburgers at the ballpark, and over the loudspeaker came the sweetly sung words, oh, say, can you see? What happened next? Do you think, did everyone just continue on with their business? No, they stopped. They turned. Some put their hands over their heart. A lot of people took their hats off. They found a flag to look at. Now, some of them were digital flags. There were a lot of those. But we were all looking at some form of flag. Now, what would have happened if I hadn't done that? Would the police have come and taken me away? Would I have been kicked out and sent to some other country if I did not turn around and listen to the national anthem? Of course not. You're not going to lose your citizenship, but there are some things that citizens tend to do to show that they are citizens, to show that they're taking their citizenship seriously. And one of those things is respecting the national anthem. I might have gotten some dirty looks, but that's about it. In the same way, citizens of God's kingdom, there are certain things they tend to do. You don't have to do them. No one's going to kick you out if you don't. But many citizens have certain activities to show that they take their citizenship in God's kingdom seriously. One of the things that people in God's kingdom tend to do is gather for worship. You get a check on that one this week. Good job. We had a worship survey a couple of months ago, and one of the things we asked was, you know, what people most appreciate. Like, why do you come to worship? And they commented, you commented, you like to leave inspired, or others like to have something to ponder during the week. Some love the music. Almost everyone mentioned something about being uplifted by the relationships and the people here. And in fact, having a core of deep relationships, that's another one of the hallmarks of citizens of God's kingdom. Our hymn today was partly written about this, actually. The last part of the Apostles' Creed says, I believe in the Holy Spirit, the Holy Catholic Church, the communion of saints. It goes on from there. But that's the part that our hymn today is about. Now, one quick note here, because I always get this question. When we say one, you know, the Holy Catholic Church, notice that it's a little c, not a big C. And sometimes you'll see that church has a big C instead of a little c. So what that's trying to say is we're not talking about the Roman Catholic Church. We are talking about the Holy Catholic, meaning universal church. All of the churches, all of all time. That's what that means. We're not saying we're Catholic in the Roman Catholic manner. So now you know that. And it's also saying that the church isn't on its own. It's about God's kingdom in all times, in all places. That's the communion of saints we have, is a unity with each other, but also a unity with Christians of every time and every place. The last verse of the hymn reminds us, yet she, the church on earth, has union with God the three in one and mystic sweet communion with those whose rest is one. We are not in this alone. I've shared it before, but it's worth sharing every once in a while that, you know, in college I tried to be a Christian without other Christians. And I even produced my own commentary on the Gospel of Matthew, and if you want to read it, you shouldn't. It's not any good. But I tried to take my faith seriously, but without any other Christians around, and it didn't work. I gave it the good old college try. I gave it my best, took it seriously. It didn't work. I was bored and listless. It wasn't until I came back to the church, to the gathering of the saints, the communion of the saints, that my life took off again and my faith was reignited. Deep relationships are a hallmark of the citizens of God's kingdom. Now, another thing that I've noticed when I wasn't with other Christians is that I didn't grow very much. I kind of stayed the same. Even as I was producing that commentary, all it did was capture where I was. It didn't help me get any further. And as I look back on my life, of all the times I have trusted God, whether I understood it or not, many times I didn't, I've never regretted trusting God. Not once. Now, maybe this is just me, but even though I can say that I have never regretted trusting God, I still sometimes have difficulty deciding to trust God. I'm the only one who does that, right? You've all figured that one out. If so, give me the secret. I'd love to know. So really, though, spiritual growth isn't its own goal. It's not just about learning some Bible trivia and then going about your day. When we grow spiritually, we are supposed to live it out. We trust God more in some part of our lives. But the thing is, that's to our benefit. We're not losing something by deciding to trust God. I've never regretted it. We are better off when we trust God with our lives. Can you think of a time you regretted trusting God? I can't. I know some people who've had false hope, false understanding of what God was promising, but that's a little bit different. growing in our trust of God, trusting God in our daily lives. That's another hallmark of the citizens of God's kingdom. And a final hallmark of those citizens is in the fourth verse of the hymn. Till with the vision glorious, her longing eyes are blessed, the great church victorious shall be the church at rest. Notice that we don't get to be the church at rest until Jesus comes again. That's not, our job isn't to sit around resting until Jesus comes again. In the meantime, we are called the church militant, the church on the move, the church making a difference. As Jesus said in the first text today, if any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow me. Until Jesus comes again, we are to be the church serving our neighbors, the church serving our community, the church serving our world. Serving others is a fourth hallmark of citizens of God's kingdom. So we know that the church's one foundation is that solid rock statement of faith. Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of the living God. That's our only citizenship test. Just going bowling together won't be enough. But if we add anything else on top of that, that's too much. But we do know that citizens do certain things, kind of like honoring the national anthem. Citizens of God's kingdom tend to gather for worship. They tend to have deep relationships. They tend to do things that help them trust God more and more in their life, and they tend to serve others to make the earth look a little bit more like heaven. Now, when you hear that list, do you check off all of those, or do you have any gaps? Any citizenly activities that God might be calling you to trust him more? Well, if so, wouldn't it be nice if we had a list of all the opportunities here at First Press Littleton? Wouldn't it be nice if we had a booklet with opportunities based on whether you're children, youth, adults, or gifted in music? Wouldn't it be nice if we had a day where you could talk to other people, hopefully outside, depending on our prayers for no rain? Wouldn't that be nice? Based on your laughter, you've picked up where I'm going with this. We got the opportunity fair today. What a coincidence. And for the three or four of you who actually like to read things, we have a list of every opportunity posted on the walls in Chandler and in the hallway on the parking lot level. For those of you who want that breakdown, we have that booklet on your way out. Pick up the booklet and see those opportunities. If you've got, like for children, there's stuff for children to do and ways to help with children's ministry. Same with you. So we curated that list a little bit. But then for the 97% of the rest of you who don't want to read anything, that's what the outside experience is all about. Find something, if you're not already connected in some way, if you don't have a lot of check boxes on those citizenly activities, this day is for you. This is our way of trying to lower the gap, to try to do everything in our power to help you put your faith into practice. And if you've been only worshiping with us for a little while, maybe you're like, I'm not connected here very much, but you want to make this your church home. You want to meet some others here. Some new, some have been here for a long time. Well, then let the office know you want to be part of the new member class that we're going to have starting at the end of the month. We're gonna crash the community dinner first, grab some free food, and then go learn once you're full. On the downside, you have to spend time with me, but on the upside, you get good food. So it's a trade-off. What citizenly activity might make sense for you? You're not going to lose your Jesus card if you don't do any of them. That statement of faith is enough. But it actually benefits you to trust God more with your life. I guarantee you won't regret it. Amen.